No, that's the fact. They either vote for the budget or you vote against the budget. I don't know if the ANC will get enough support to vote to get the 201 that they require to get the budget passed. But it looks as if they're very close to that. I think the main issue here is not really about VAT. Everybody's talking about VAT, and that's the sticking point. And the main issue here is who's going to blink first, it seems to me. And that's what the political parties are trying to see if they can. This is a game of chicken, I suppose. They want to see who's going to sit with the egg on their face in the end. If the ANC does not force through an increase in VAT, then they will sit with the egg on their face. And if they actually succeed in forcing through the half a percent increase in VAT, then they will come out, well, I guess, looking fairly good after this budget. But I think this is a lose-lose for the ANC. If they succeed in doing this, everybody's going to point fingers at the ANC and say, you increase taxes, and especially in the poor. If they don't succeed in doing this, they would have blinked first. I guess this is a lose for the ANC. It doesn't matter how you look at it.
Yeah, one way of looking at the size of the state is simply to express state expenditure as a percentage of GDP. And in 1970, if I remember correctly, state to GDP, spending to GDP was about 15%. And today, it's close to about 35%. So there was more than a doubling in the relative size of the state. But again, what is your definition of the state? Shouldn't you include things like, for example, the road accident fund? The road accidents fund deficit is a couple of hundreds of billions of rands. I haven't even included that in my debt numbers, by the way. But, you know, when you have such extremely high levels of state debt to GDP, then you become very, very vulnerable at all sort of other levels. Now, let me give you one example. If Donald Trump decides tomorrow morning that he's going to implement some sort of financial sanction against South Africa, that is going to hurt really badly. Because typically the Americans, the last quarter, the Americans bought, there's something called portfolio flows. Portfolio flows are when foreigners typically will come and buy our bonds in the bond market or our equities on the JSE and stuff like that. Now, the Americans, the last most recent numbers, the last quarter, the Americans bought 50% of all portfolio flows were from the Americans, from the United States. So if Donald Trump tells them, listen, you're not allowed to buy South African bonds anymore, with this extremely high levels of debt, and see what's going to happen. The bond yield is going to bomb out. Pick a number. Currently, it's trading the long end of the yield curve is trading at about 11%. That's going to bomb out to 15 or whatever percent. Who's going to pick up those bonds? And it's probably going to be the local banks. And they are already holding a lot of government bonds. And the Reserve Bank already indicated that they're concerned about the banks holding too much government bonds. And when yields go up, the value of those instruments go down. And that means that balance sheets of banks can come under pressure. And that means all sort of other bad things. A weaker currency, high interest rates, weaker economic growth and stuff like that. So we are extremely, extremely vulnerable because of our high fiscal debt situation. So I'm completely against any measure that is going to give more money in the hands of the Minister of Finance. The only way you can get politicians to spend less money is to give them less money. And that's where we are now. We must cut back on state spending. And there are many places, and I can give you examples of many places where we can cut back on state spending. But the first place for the Minister of Finance to start is to do something symbolic. That's crucially important. And something symbolic will be to cut back on that 2 billion rand that they spent on the Blue Light Brigades, for example. Just do that. And it will be a sign to the rest of us that they're actually trying to cut back on this unnecessary state spending as well.
And they're all trying to get the credit for the VAT that's not going to be increased now. And I had the opportunity to speak to one or two politicians, and I told them, they said yes, but they voted for it on condition of. But you can't do that. You can't vote on condition. You either voted for it or you didn't vote for it. But they're all trying to get the credit for it, including the ANC. They are acting, I don't say this lightly, but they are acting like a bunch of toddlers. You know, the way that they've managed this whole thing, I don't have words. I don't know what to call it. Just put the numbers in perspective here, Alec, and see what we're talking about. We're talking about 75 billion rand VAT that they're not going to get over 3 years. That's a 3-year period, by the way. So this 0.5% increase would have given, according to the Minister of Finance, about 13.5 billion. I don't think so. I think you would have gotten something like about 10 billion, closer to 10 billion, because the economy is very weak. There's very weak demand in the economy. But still, you know, it's a big amount of money, but in a bigger picture of things, it's not really that much. Let me give you one or two numbers. The Minister of Finance, on in his bank account, on average, in his bank account, at the Exchequer account and the tax and loan accounts, he has something. And let me just repeat the VAT number. The VAT number comes down to about 1 billion rand per month. That's roughly what it's going to be. So in the bank account of the Minister of Finance is usually approximately 200 billion rand. That's the balances at the Exchequer and at tax and loan accounts of the Minister of Finance. He can write a check of 200 billion rand. That's, of course, he needs a float there, but that's the amount of money that he's got in the bank, literally. If you look at the Gold and Foreign Exchange Contingency Reserve account, for example, that is approximately 350 billion rand. That fluctuates by as much as 40 billion rand per month sometimes. So now we nearly brought the government down for a billion rand per month. You know, it really doesn't make sense. I mean, why didn't they act like adults and discuss this kind of stuff before the time? And now we still don't have a budget. Everything has been put on hold. Everything is upside down. The economy and businesses incurred a lot of cost to implement and then scrap this increase of VAT. And some of them even started charging VAT. So how are you going to untangle this? It's a disaster. You know, I think the Minister of Finance should resign. And I think we should have fresh elections. That's what I think should happen. Obviously, if you cut back on spending, you will spend less money on people. And if you spend less money on people, people tend to get angry at you. Now, the people on which you can spend less are 18 million people that receive grants from the state. 18 million of them. Every month, there are 18 million grant recipients in South Africa. And there are, depending on how you define that, about close to 2 million civil servants in South Africa. The civil servants just got a 5.5%. Well, we don't have a budget anymore. But in the budget that was on off budget, they received a 5.5% increase. Oh, we can't afford that. Now imagine if this 2 million civil servants, if you do not give them that 5.5% increase, what do you think Kusatu is going to say about that? And Kusatu is a tripartite alliance partner. So we know what he, I mean, are the difficult choices. You must spend less money on people and go and tell people you're going to spend less money on them, see what they're going to do.
Maybe I could just stand back a little bit and just to try to explain what I'm trying to say in terms of economic growth and where everything comes from and why I think the president is so completely and totally wrong. Remember, modern economies centers around service industry, the tertiary industry. And modern economies are based on two things, of many things, but two things are very important. One is skills, very special skills, and the other one is technology. And it doesn't matter what part of the economy you're looking at. Now, listening to the president, it sounds like he got his economic training somewhere in the 1920s. He sounds like Karl Marx, because Karl Marx, he thinks that the economic growth centers around so-called capital, and that's where the word capitalism comes from. And capital includes actual money, and it includes land. That's what, in the mind of Karl Marx, that is what matters. And of course, labor. And you put these three things together, then somehow, by magic, you get economic growth. That is not what the modern economy looks like. And that's what the ANC has done. The ANC basically undermined the whole skills development system in South Africa. And that's why we have really very horrible skills in South Africa. And that's not all. You need a good environment in order to operate and in order to run a business. You need a pavement. You need electricity. You need a Transnet, trains, the things that run. You need infrastructure. You need a safe environment. Those are the kind of things that you need if you want to empower people, really. Looking at South Africa, the South African economy, primary industries, like, for example, mining and agriculture, they are contribute significantly less, relatively speaking, to the economy than, for example, what you do, the service industry, in the tertiary industry. In the meantime, what's been happening in South Africa as well, we have been deindustrializing. We are losing our factories. We are losing our factories because we do not have electricity. We do not have proper trains that's running properly. So, The lack of empowerment in South Africa and the lack of black empowerment in South Africa, the reason for that is because of the ANC. It's because an incompetent ANC with the wrong policies, the wrong ideology, and quite often a corrupt ANC government as well. Do not blame the private sector. The private sector would want to, certainly want to grow their businesses. And we see that. The private sector, where they get the opportunity, they grow that. But if you think you can redistribute wealth and think by redistributing wealth, you're going to increase wealth, you've got it completely and totally wrong. Clearly, our president does not understand the very importance and the essence of a modern economy. If we can get economic growth up to 5 or 6%, forget about all these social and political objectives, or just get this economy to grow and everybody will gain from that. What is happening at the moment now, the capitalists, those bad guys, the industrialists, the rich people, the skilled people, they are leaving South Africa. And in any way, it's becoming more and more difficult to tax them because economic activity is not happening in the primary industries anymore. It's happening in the cloud more and more, and that's where economic growth is shifting to. And we're losing those skilled people in South Africa. So what we're doing now, what's been happening the past 15 years will continue unless we make a total U-turn. And it can happen. It can happen to get this economy to grow again. But I'm afraid, listening to the president and other political leaders, I'm afraid we're a long way from having that U-turn that we so urgently need. A black economic empowerment. I've been thinking about this, and I've been thinking about this word transformation. And you know what, Alec? I'm very, very much in favor of, listen to the literal meaning of the words black economic empowerment. I'm very much in favor of transforming the South African economy and the South African society. But in my book, what it means to transform and what it means to empower is different from what we are doing in South Africa. I think when you talk about BEE or transformation in South Africa, it means that you take from one group of people and you give to another group of people. Now, let's be honest about this. The idea behind BEE, or at least the way it's implemented in South Africa, transformation, is to take from white people and give to black people. But you don't give to all black people. You give it to a select group of black people. So actually what we have, we've got BBE, Black Billionaire Empowerment in South Africa, where the assets are transferred to a select group of individuals. The primary function of the state is to look after its people, to protect its people. It's called the social pact. So I will not take the law in my own hands. I will give it to the state to protect me, and I will fund the state by way of taxes. And the job of the state is to look after me. Now, if you get high-profile people like politicians getting attacked, and where they basically took the law in their own hands because they were forced to do that, that is a clear, clear sign of a state that is simply failing in its primary function, and that is to protect the people of the country. This is a dangerous place in which we are living in, and the reason why is because the state is not doing its job, its duty, and we can rightfully ask the question, do we have the responsibility still and the obligation to keep on funding the state? I wonder. These are some philosophical questions about whether the social pact still exists in South Africa, because I think the social pact has been damaged, and it has been damaged by the ANC primarily. Well, the South African financial markets are very well regulated, very, very liquid, and very, very attractively priced. So I'm putting myself in the shoes of a young asset manager in New York, for example. And I can tell you, I will certainly try to take a bite out of the South African bond market, Apple. You buy into an undervalued currency, you buy into a very liquid, well-regulated financial market, and you buy into this extremely juicy yields. So you put some money into there. Why not? Put 1% or 2% or 3% of your fund into the South African market. There are some risks. But my goodness, look at this amazing return that you're getting. And if something goes wrong, hopefully you can be first to run out of the country and sell your stuff again. So, but yeah, if I was a foreigner, I don't think it's a case of they know something we don't. I think it's a case of South Africa. It's an obvious sitter. But at the same time, we must say, since South Africa is clearly so attractive from a financial point of view, just imagine what can happen to South Africa if we have a strong and a good government.
The bond yields, I mean, if we get a government that say the right things, the bond yield's going to run by 200 basis points. The JSE is going to go up by 20% or even more. Just imagine the wealth effect that can be unleashed by just saying the right kind of things by a proper and a good and a competent government, certainly what we don't have at the moment. So it's there. I mean, there are so many, I like this term, low-hanging fruits, but it certainly is there. All we need is just a good government. We don't have that.
Communists hate prices. Communists, in fact, what they did, and this is really the case, they fixed it in the Soviet Union, they fixed all prices. All prices in the economy were fixed at a certain level. Bread and milk and cheese, everything right across the Soviet Union was fixed at a certain level. And very cheap. So everything was very cheap. You just couldn't get it. But it was very, very cheap. That's really the case. If you talk about the communist system, there are always shortages. There are some other issues as well, sometimes surpluses, but there are always shortages. So the communists hate prices that change because they like to organize stuff. They want to set everything in the economy. They want to take all the decisions. So prices are fixed in the Soviet. And a free market system, prices do this all the time. And they keep on telling and giving you signals, buy more, produce less kind of stuff. And so that's why it's so important for prices to go up and down, because without it, we can't see the signals. And you don't know if somebody is rich, because you want to know if somebody is rich. Talking about prices, now I just had a look at prices, and you will find that for the last couple of years, well, in fact, forever, prices, and we've never had it this good, by the way. We are living in the best times ever. Prices have been coming down. And not only have prices been coming down, prices collapsed. On the expenditure side, there are close to about 20 million people. No, I'm lying to you. There are about 30 million people receiving an income from the state every month out of a population of 65 million people. Every month. I can tell you on the revenue side, they are the biggest revenue source to the Minister of Finance. 40% of total revenue is personal income taxes. And there are a small number of individuals paying just about all of that. The third most important revenue source is company taxes. There are 1,000 companies that pay more than 75% of total company taxes in South Africa. So on both those two major taxes, we are over the so-called Laffer curve, which means if you increase that further, you're actually going to collect less of that, just by the way. The only tax that we can potentially increase is value-added tax. But of course, politically, that is very difficult to do. So the state finances are in very deep trouble, and we are heading for a financial crisis. What is that going to look like? Of this, about 6.5 trillion, government numbers is close to 6, the central government numbers is about 6 trillion, about 70% of GDP. 20% of the rand-denominated bonds are funded by foreigners, and they are mostly Americans and Europeans. But what has been happening recently is that the banks, the South African banks, have been starting to accumulate more of government bonds. So much so that the Reserve Bank is getting concerned about that. And the Reserve Bank indicated about 2 years ago already that they are getting a little bit concerned about the banks taking on too much government debt. I just want to make a very clear point here, and that the South African banks are very healthy, well capitalized, and perhaps too protected, but the Reserve Bank is doing an excellent job. But the Reserve Bank did indicate they're getting a little bit uncomfortable with the levels of debt that the South African banks are holding of government debt. Now imagine the following scenario. So I'm telling you, we're heading for a financial crisis. We're heading for the following scenario, and that is Donald Trump gets up one morning and he's not in a good mood, and he tells his asset managers that they're not allowed to buy South African bonds anymore, and they start selling the South African bonds. Now, the South African bonds are currently trading, the 10-year bonds at about 9%, 9, 10% or so. Inflation, let's call it 3% or so, which give you a real return of approximately 7%. So, if you're a foreigner, you sit in America, and you're a young bond trader, you have a currency that is extremely cheap, so the interest into South Africa is very cheap. You have a very liquid market, and you have a very, very juicy yield, very high yield that you can get. Obviously, you're going to buy this. But unfortunately, the opposite is also true. When something goes wrong, they can start selling those bonds. Long yields go up, the rand goes to pot, short-term interest rates go up, and the South African economy goes in a further decline or a further nosedive. So that is a potential scenario, and that's something that I'm very, very concerned about. We have to cut back on the debt-to-GDP ratio. We can't do that by spending less. That's politically just not possible. Of course, we can cut back on rats and mice and reduce the cabinet and so on, but that's not where the big money goes. The big money goes to education, and welfare services, and very importantly, to interest on state debt. We can't really cut back on state expenditure. There's the only one way that we can fix the debt to GDP ratio, and that is through economic growth. There's nothing else. And I know what the secret to economic growth is. There are three things that you need to do. You must protect private property rights. You must, and with that I mean the very broad definition of private property rights, the right to my life, the right to movement and stuff like that. Secondly, you must protect and you must encourage free trade. You don't need a PhD in economics to understand this sort of stuff. There's a saying that there's no free lunch, but there's one exception, very important exception, and that is free trade. Think about this. If two economic agents trade with one another, both the buyer and the seller gain from this transaction, because otherwise the transaction would not have happened. And you can only trade freely if you own the stuff. That's why the protection of private property rights are so important. The third thing has to do with prices, sound money. You do that. You do those three things, and I guarantee you, your economy is going to grow.